Hello and welcome back to Talking Talmud. I'm Anne Gordon here with my friend and chavrut to Yardina Osband, our daf of the day, Masechet Bava Metzia, daf Kaf Vav, page 26. I'm actually going to start at the very bottom of 25, where we had talked about how there were a bunch of Mishnayot coming fast on the heels of each other. Here's the last one from yesterday. That's the first one really from today. Matzah Begal Ovakotel Yashan. Lost items, right? And you find them in a heap on where there's stone, like a rubble of from a stone, or on an old wall, which I imagine, like, you know, the northern Scotland old walls type of thing. Hare elushalo, then they belong to you, the finder. If you find the lost items on a new wall and it's from the midpoint and outward, right, we'll talk about what that means exactly. Then also, they belong to the finder. But if you find them from the midpoint but inward, then they belong to the person who owns that home where that wall is. Now, if that same homeowner rented out the house, like on a regular, an Airbnb, right? On a regular basis, right? So that you don't really know who lives there and whose stuff belongs to whom, what. Then, even if you found those same lost items and it was already inside the house, right? But it's who knows who's there, then the finder gets to keep them. You can't really, it's very difficult to identify items, you know, unless they literally had somebody's name on them. That's a different kind of thing. That's always a different kind of thing. Okay. But Gemara, of course, is going to explain. Right? The idea is that the person could always say they belong to the Amoraim, not the Amoraim, the scholars, the Amoraim, the Amorites, right? Those people who lived in the land of Israel long before it was conquered by the returning, you know, Israelites. And then the Gemara says, Atu Amoraim Matznea? Right? Did the Amorites really, like, hide items in this way, like tucked in a crevice of a wall? Yisrael lo matzna'e, but the Jews didn't do that. They don't hide things. Lo tzricha. So the Gemara answers and says, no. The whole point is a very specific case. The Braita was talking about a specific case. This, and now I'm at the very top of our daf, dishtif tfei, where the item itself that was found is very rusted. So it's clear that it's been there for a very long time. I think maybe I'm reading too much in, but it seems to me that the idea that this belonged to the Amorites was right? I mean, the idea that they belonged to the Amorites before the Jewish people ever even got to conquer the land of Israel, and then they conquered the land, and so they conquered all of the property, and now hundreds of years later, thousands of years later, we're going to say, oh, maybe it belonged to the Amorites. Unless I'm missing something here, this is what I mean by tongue-in-cheek. I think the point is we don't have an identifiable previous owner because it goes back too long, but not because it's really the Amorites. I don't know. Yordana, what do you think? Am I going too far?
I don't know. I mean, we talking about who belongs in what land seems very relevant today.
Oh, gosh. I hadn't even thought about it that way. Yeah, I hear you. I think that the roots to the land, you know, go deep. And I feel like the claim here is, you know, oh, that those items that belong to the Amorites, it's not saying, the Gemara doesn't say, go back and find them. It's a reason to say that you could keep them because it's irrelevant at this time. Right? Meaning the idea that you could say, oh, they belong to the Amorites who lived here back then. And therefore, what? And therefore, the way they were hidden is only going to be from them, or it's this rusted item that we have to say the owner was from a very long time ago. I guess you could say go search that person out. I don't think that the Gemara is saying that.
Well, I'll take it even. I know I got into something like very current, but you know, this does make me think of when you know you hear about like the British Museum, for example, right? Which where do they get most of the items in the British Museum? They whatever Britain conquered. You know, they took things right and brought it back and put it in a museum. And now there's a whole push that a lot of museums around the world that are similar to that actually have to return those items, even if they're from, let's say, empires or indigenous people that may not even exist anymore, but somehow belong in a particular land, they actually need to be returned. So I actually think this is actually shockingly relevant to modern day world.
Okay, I hear this. I do hear it. I want to just note that what the Gemara does next is to follow through the rest of the case of the Mishnah, right? If you found lost items by a new wall, right? At what point do they belong to the homeowner? At what point do they belong to the finder? And the whole question of what is the nature of the object that is found, that can be relevant. Rav Ashi gives an example about a knife that's found in the wall. And he says, it follows the handle, meaning how is it placed that you could say, oh, it belongs to the homeowner, or it belongs to somebody passing by and they've had yeush, right? They've given up on it and now it belongs to the person who found it. So all of these different cases that are listed in the Mishnah have extra details if you keep going about them in the Gemara, like the idea that it was a rusted old thing, or the handle of a knife, which way is it facing? Which way in the hollow of the wall, which way is your item, where is it specifically placed? I'm not going to read it inside in the interest of time, but I think that those kinds of details are absolutely necessary to be able to round out the cases.
All right, I'm going to move on to just the last piece of the Gemara here on this Mishnah. You know, I think we're getting very caught up in the details of a siman or how things are found and do they have to be returned. And I think what we're forgetting is that this whole idea of Hashovas Aveda, right, that's, you know, returning a lost object is actually biblical in origin. It's really a deoraisa. It's a mitzvah in the Torah that if you find something, you have to return it. And so Rava here presents sort of quotes a variety of psukim to basically say, if you don't return it, these are all the biblical commandments that you transgress. But Amar Rava. Rava says, Ra'a sela shenaflef. Somebody sees a sela that fell from the owner. Natla lifnei yeush al menas legozla. And he took it before the owner had yeush with the intention of stealing it, right? So in other words, the case is an owner drops a coin, a bystander, somebody who's standing by, picks it up right away. He's going to steal it before the owner even had a chance to know that it was missing and that he was going to lose it. And we know that, like, just a coin by itself is, you know, is going to have yay, or she doesn't think he's actually going to get it back. So what does he say? Over bikulan, he has transgressed all of the biblical commandments that you can. And then he goes and he lists them all. Mishum lo tigzol, right? Do not rob. So that's Vayikra chapter 19, verse 13. Umishum hashev tishavim, you shall return what tis. That's the Devarim chapter 22, verse 1. Umishum lo tuchal lihitalem, you shall not hide it from him. That is Devarim chapter 22, verse 3, right? That by stealing the coin instead of taking it to return it, the finder basically failed to fulfill a positive mitzvah aseh, to return the lost article. But he also violated a prohibition, right? The positive commandment is in verse 1 of chapter 22 of Devarim. But in verse 3, there's a prohibition which says not hiding the object from the person who lost it. The afal gav de chazra la'achar yeish, and even if he returns it after the owner despaired of it, matanahu de hayavle, it's actually considered a present that the finder gave to the owner. The surah de avar avad, but the transgression that he committed still stands. So in a way, like Rav is saying, once you do this, you almost like you can't make it up. There's no way that you can make up what you did. Which I think is really interesting. And then he has a second ruling here. Let's say he took it from before the owner despaired of it with the intention of returning it. But after the owner had yeush, then he decides to steal it. Over mishum hashev tishavim. So then he transgressed, you shall surely return it, right? Which was Devarim chapter 22, verse 1. Now he has a third halacha here. If a bystander waited until the owner despaired, and then he took the sela for himself, then he only transgressed the lo ta'aseh of you shall not hide it, which was Devarim chapter 22, verse 1. And then finally, the last one, Amar Rava. Rava says, Haman de chazi de nafal zuze mechaberei bechalta. If one saw a zuz fall from his fellow into the sand, v'yishkachayv shekalei, and he found it and took it, lo machayv lahadurei lei. He is not obligated to return to his fellow. My time, what's the reason? Hakud de nafal minei miyayishu. Because it can be assumed that the one who it fell from has yeish. Afal gav de chazi de ate arbalav become marbel. Marbal. This is even though the finder sees it, sees that the owner brings a sieve and is sifting through the sand, right? He's only sifting because Meimar Amar, he says to himself, Ki hechi denafel minai dite. Just as my coin fell for me, hacha nafel mi inish achrina. So too, maybe the coin fell, a coin fell from somebody else, ubishkachana mide, and maybe I'll find something else. So that's a very interesting case. So on the one hand, Rava gives us all of this information to basically be like, you need to take returning things seriously. And because really it's a commandment and it's something that you have to do. On the other hand, we have this, it's interesting to me that it's almost like in a way it undoes a little bit what Rava is saying by saying, okay, but here, but it's going the other extreme and saying, but you don't have to go that crazy. When there's really a case of yeush, it's yeush. And even if it looks like the owner is still looking, just because the owner wants the object, misses the object, looks for the object, it doesn't undo yeush. Like yeush is yeush when they have it. If they know that the way that they lost it, they're never really unlikely going to get it back, it's still considered yeush, even though the owner may seem like he still cares. And so the point is that yeush, the way Rava's depicting it here, it doesn't have to do with how the owner still relates to the object. In a way, it has to do with what is the chance that the owner actually is going to get that object back.
Right. And then even if he's not, then regardless of how much he wants to get it back, if everybody knows that the odds are like just impossible, then it doesn't matter if you never give up, because the giving up is kind of officially an objective thing that takes place because of that kind of,
right,
whatever the item
is. Right. It's not an emotional state. It's not whether or not you emotionally feel it. It's just what we say it actually is. Okay. I'm quickly going to do this last Mishnah here. So tomorrow we can start with the Mishnah on the top of the next stop. Matzah b'chanut. If somebody finds articles in a store, haray elu shelo, they belong to the finder. So what we're talking about are articles that have no identifying marks that are found in a store. And because the store is open to the public, anybody who finds an article there, you know, for sure the person who lost it has yeish. So in other words, that's like you're shopping a grocery store and you find something, you know, people don't assume that they're going to get it back, the owner. However, if he finds it between the counter and the storekeeper, it belongs to the shopkeeper, okay? Because often, you know, the way the shopkeeper would sort of sit in front of the counter and you would maybe point and ask for, you know, merchandise, and then he would sort of get the money and then he would take it from you. So if it's between the counter and him, then we would assume that it will like dropped or fell from the person who owns the store. Livnei shulchani, if somebody finds coins in front of a money changer, haray elu shelo, they belong to the finder. Beina kisei b'lesh shulchani, but if it's between the stool and the money changer, haray elu shel shulchani. So again, this just has to do with belongs to the money changer. It has to do with sort of the setup of where the person who's doing the money changing and where they put the money out, where they would be and who does it more likely belong to. Halokeach peirot mechaveiro, if somebody purchases produce from his fellow, osha shilach lo chaveiro peirot, or his fellow sends him produce, umatzah behan ma'od, and he finds coins in the fruit, haray elu shelo, they belong to him. Imayu tsururin, however, the coins were tied and bundled, right? So there's the siman, no tel machris, then he needs to announce them. Okay, so again, we have this sort of, you know, interesting case here where it's sort of like you just happen to find something within something. The Gemara starts off with a whole discussion about the money changer and trying to understand a little bit of the money changer case better. But the last thing that they're going to discuss is this case about the peirot. I just want to read this part. Reish Lakish basically says, I'm a Reish Lakish Mishum Rabbi Yanai. Reish Lakish is the name of Rabbi Yanai. Lo Shanu Elo, this Mishnah, right, that the finder can keep the coins that is in the produce, right? Is only taught kilokeach minatagar. Somebody purchases the produce from a merchant, right? Who the merchant purchased the produce from a bunch of different suppliers. So in other words, you don't know who the fruit came from or how it got there. But if you bought the produce directly from the person who, you know, get, you know, harvest the fruit, then you have to return it because it's from the whoever you bought the produce actually from. And then the Gemara gives another source for that, you know, as well, and tries to understand. So I think that's an important, you know, little qualifier that they have to that Mishnah.
I want to just note, Yerdin, I think that this provides an answer to the question that you raised the other day about the, like, you know, when two things are found in a similar place, and do we assume that they came together or they didn't? In this case, right, these are all the examples where, yes, you assume they belong to the logical person to whom, you know, who's there, the money jader with his coins, you know, the location of the, where it's found, it tells you, yes, that belonged to the shopkeeper. It wasn't a bypasser, right? Things like that. So I think that your point, your original point, your original question about things being in proximity, I think this is a good example of, well, at least sometimes, certainly, that does make the difference.
That's our DAP discussion for the day. Rank us, review us on all major podcasts. Thank you to Rebbe Michelle Farber for hosting us on the Hadron website. Let us know what you thought about this DAP on our Talking Talmud Facebook page. And until tomorrow, go and learn.